Chair Trumbull.
Here.
Vice Chair McClure.
Here.
Representatives Alexander, Avila.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Burton.
Here.
Bush.
Here.
Diamond.
Here.
Drake.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Ranking Member Duran.
Here.
Fine.
Here.
Geller excused. Graul.
Here.
Grant.
Here.
Ingolia.
Here.
Lavalla.
Here.
Leek excused. Masullo.
Here.
Umfroy.
Here.
Perez.
Here.
Plakin.
Here.
Placentia. Renner.
Here.
Roth excused. Stevenson.
Here.
Tomco.
Here.
Wilhite.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Williamson.
Here.
You have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sherrill. Quorum being present, I'd like to welcome everybody to the Appropriations Committee. Members today, well, first off, Representative Duran, excited to have you as our new ranking member. Would you like to say anything? You're welcome to.
Just excited to work with you, Chair.
Oh,
thank you.
Riveting stuff. I appreciate it. So, members today, speaking of riveting, we've got a very good presentation that I will be doing today. So those of you who are excited for lunch, I'll make sure we get out of here pretty soon. And then after that, we've got Ben Watkins with the Division of Bond Finance. So first, let's go into this brief presentation today. Let's see, how does this work? There we go. So current year budget, this is the budget we passed last session, $101.7 billion, three main funding sources with different levels of appropriation discretion. These are things that everybody knows about, federal trust funds, state trust funds, and GR. Obviously, GR being the most discretionary and federal trust funds being the least discretionary. The long-range financial outlook key points, the Legislative Budget Commission issued the long-range financial outlook back in September. The first look at next year's budget focuses primarily on the GR, or on the General Revenue Fund, and projections based on estimating conferences and recent historical experiences. So the outlook shows the budget's in really good shape based on current estimates. Significant projected ending balances expected for the next 3 years. Compared to positions last year, the current outlook is very positive, and I think those are for two reasons. One is opening up the economy significantly improved the revenue picture, and also, you know, as we've talked about a lot in this committee, prudent budgeting has kept overall size of recurring GR revenue in check. You know, even though this is positive news, folks, sizable balances depend on the legislature continuing to show restraint in creating or expanding new recurring programs while, you know, also making necessary one-time investments in the environment and in the infrastructure. Most significant GR budget drivers are in healthcare and education. For critical needs, Medicaid, which we'll talk about in greater detail in the next slide, is the largest cost driver. The next largest critical need driver relates to the FEFP. The outlook includes funding for enrollment growth and increased total funds per student. The largest other high priority need driver restoring non-recurring funds for higher education, state universities, the EASE grants, and the new Open Door grant program. And the outlook also includes funds to continue investing in water and land conservation and environment programs for the three-year average. So as we touched on just briefly a minute ago is the Medicaid caseload. The GR revenue needs for Medicaid is the single largest driver for next fiscal year. Medicaid enrollment is expected to increase by 517,546 cases to more than 5 million beneficiaries in the 21-22 year. Caseload estimates are well above the pre-pandemic level of 4 million beneficiaries, which is just 4 years ago. I think it's important to note that nearly 23% of Florida's entire population is expected to be enrolled in the state's Medicaid program this year. Total Medicaid expenditures for fiscal year 22-23 are expected to increase $1.4 billion above the recurring base budget. The outlook includes an increase in recurring GR of $1.2 billion to meet the state's share of the total need. I think it's important that 1.4, or out of that 1.4, 1.2 of that will be GR because of the of us expecting to lose the increased FMAP December 31st of this year. Projected general revenue more than sufficient to support anticipated spending plus a minimum reserve. Outlook primarily reflects law requirements, no funding included for new programs, expansion or current programs, or new funding levels for appropriations projects. The outlook does not make adjustments for potential risks such as major hurricanes either. Projected ending balances for upcoming fiscal year is nearly $7 billion. The legislature could choose to use some or all of these balances to bolster reserves, increase discretionary spending, or provide additional tax reductions. 71% or $4.9 billion of the projected balance is non-recurring and cannot be spent on a recurring basis. Recurring investments made in year one of the outlook period, have a compounding effect over time and reduce future ending balances. Told you I'd be quick, so where do we go from here? I mean, the reality is, we've talked about it a lot, we have to make sure that we're spending well within our means, that we're keeping sizable balances, and that we're making sure that we have sufficient rainy day funds. That was the fastest presentation I've ever done. Does anybody have any questions? Oh, I'm sorry, we've got some public testimony. Karen Woodall, the Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy. You're recognized, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. So I just wanted to remind us that when we're talking about the Medicaid portion of the budget in particular, Medicaid enrollment grows when poverty increases, and it goes down when the economy improves, number one. Number two, this state has not, y'all have not expanded Medicaid in any way, shape, or form. We continue to be one of 12 states that haven't done that. So people who are qualifying now that are new enrollees are qualifying at the very low income eligibility levels that we have. If you're a parent, you can't be making more than 31% of the poverty level. If you're an adult that doesn't have dependent children, you can't qualify at all, because we don't cover you. So I think it's important that to be concerned, actually, about a statement that if 23% of all Floridians are going to be enrolled in our very low eligibility level Medicaid system, we have a bigger problem, and that is increasing poverty and persistent poverty in the state of Florida. And the other important point about the level of enrollment now is that the federal government sent a lot of money down to increase the match rate for the Medicaid program, recognizing we're in a pandemic, we're probably going to have growth in Medicaid. And as a condition of that extra money, the states are not allowed to disenroll people once they're enrolled in Medicaid. Medicaid historically has a lot of churning. People enroll, they have to renew in 6 months, they miss a deadline, they get disenrolled, they come back in. So there's a lot of fluctuation there. So when you're not allowed to disenroll them, it makes your enrollment population be bigger for a longer period of time. And I would just encourage that we keep that in mind and maybe look at the underlying causes of what makes our Medicaid enrollment population increase as we're having these discussions moving forward. And my last point would be, even though you've got additional money, GR, that has to be spent on the Medicaid program, you still have a projected unallocated amount of $2 billion at the end of the budget process, once that's even been covered. So thank you.
Yes, ma'am, thank you. Members, any questions? Representative Pacencia, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I guess my question is there any way to break down what the increases of our Medicaid increases has been? And the reason I ask, and just to give you as an example, is we've seen, and I've been told that the largest increase in Medicaid expenditures comes from BA services, behavior analysis services here in the state. There was a great deal of fraud, maybe sometime between 5 and 8 years ago. ACA has tried to address that fraud over the last 5 to 8 years, and they're still trying to address it and trying to level off that increase in expenditures through the Medicaid program for behavior analysis. What I would like to see, if it's possible, is over the last 5 or so years, as ACA has been implementing these different provisions in order to curb the fraud, has there been either a decrease or a deceleration of the amount of families that are accessing Medicaid for their children for BA services?
We don't have I don't have that information on me for those 5 years, but it's something we can get ACA to provide for us. Representative Driscoll, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, and thank you for the very brief presentation. I did have some questions. I'm curious about, because I know that we did receive rounds of federal funding for coronavirus, and I'm just curious how that funding shows up in the general revenue carry forward, if at all.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so it does not. This is just pure GR, so it doesn't contemplate the federal money. Yes, ma'am.
So then where does that federal money show up in the budget?
In the budget outlook, we don't talk about that in the budget outlook. In the GR outlook, it would be something that we would contemplate, you know, when we were building the budget as far as what resources federally we have left over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anybody else have any questions? Good, seeing none. We'll move on to the next presentation. I'm sure will not be as brief, but I've got a great man in Mr. Ben Watkins, the Division of Bond Finance, to present debt, bonding reserves, and other factors influencing bond ratings. Mr. Watkins, War Eagle, and you're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you and the committee. I'm not sure I can match the substance or the pace of your presentation, so it's a little bit intimidating, but I'll do my best. Let's see, could I have some assistance to get to the next presentation? I know not to touch these things. Thank you. So I've been asked to come share with you today, and we tend to, the Division of Bond Finance, we do all the state's debt, so you all authorize, and include in the Appropriations Act debt. We're responsible for managing the execution of those financings. One of the other roles that we play is interacting with the rating agencies, so we tend to take a longer-term view of things. And what I wanted to share with you today is that there are excerpts of the information that we provided to the rating agencies in August when we go up and do a deep dive with them. So this is simply an overview of the information that we're going to cover today. And the punchline is through prudent budget management, through the pandemic and Florida's economic rebound and the federal funding that we received for COVID have led to historic general revenues and reserve levels. So revenues are growing, I'm sorry. So you heard the chairman talk about that. Reserve levels are at unprecedented levels, primarily because of the economic rebound, coupled with the federal funding we received. When switching to the liability side of the balance sheet, our balance sheet continues strengthening because our debt is going down, and our unfunded pension liability is also going down. On the ratings front, there's been no change. The state is still rated AAA by all three rating agencies, and we're not in jeopardy because of the good work that you all have done in terms of preparing for the economic downturn relative to COVID. So we're in a good place on that. The one thing that I would say that has changed from the last time I visited with you all is a thing called ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance practices. So it's a new lens that the rating agencies are using to incorporate into their credit analysis to think about the long-term implications of those three factors. So we'll talk a little bit about that as we move through the presentation. Like I said, we tend to take a long look at things, and this is a picture of general revenue collections. So this is just organic general revenues, primarily sales taxes and corporate income taxes. And the recovery has really been remarkable, both in terms of speed and strength. So in fiscal 2020, last quarter of 2020, when the COVID was at the outset, we were finished that fiscal year $2 billion south or below what our revenue estimates were. And since that point in time, fiscal 21, you see a tremendous, represented by the green bar, so that's the fiscal year ended 21, a tremendous growth, nearly $5 billion in additional general revenues. And so that really is largely a reflection, I think, of how Florida chose and responded to managing through the pandemic and doing everything we could to stay open, keeping schools open and allowing people to go to work. And this is reflected in the tremendous economic recovery that transpired in 21, represented by the growth in general revenues. When I look at this in context, and the only other economic cycle that I can, during my tenure, that we reflect on is what happened during the Great Recession. And so what we see is that the drop in the Great Recession was $6 billion or 22% of general revenues at that point in time. And contrast that with the revenue drop we saw from the pandemic in 2020, which was $2 billion or 6% of general revenues. So substantially less in terms of a drop in revenues. And then the other thing that I would point out is it took us 6 years to get back to pre-recession, during the Great Recession, revenue collections. Didn't get back to pre-recession levels for 6 years. And you see, in response to the pandemic, it's taken 1 year to get back to pre-pandemic levels in terms of GR collections. So that's remarkable. So the next is having a look at federal funding, two different pieces of federal funding, one under the CARES Act and one under ARPA. The first piece was received at the end of 2020. And the second piece, ARPA, a portion of that has been appropriated in the current fiscal year. And then there's a second piece expected to be received in May, which will be available for the legislature to decide what to do with that. So with respect to the federal funding, it's been a significant windfall for the state. And it's a real tribute to you from the most important thing from a financial management perspective is how the money was programmed, how the money has been used. And so the money being non-recurring money has really been able to move the needle in terms of strategic investment in infrastructure and strategically important assets for the state, rather than being programmed for recurring expenditures. And that's extraordinarily important from a financial management and a credit ratings perspective. And it's really provided an opportunity to move the needle on both resiliency infrastructure, clean water projects, and restoring the cuts to transportation as well. So this is simply another way to look at what you all and we were confronted with in looking at the pandemic and what the recovery has meant, what we were confronted with, what we thought the possibilities were, and what actually transpired. So what we see from this is in August of 2020, after the August revenue estimates, during the depths of the pandemic, we reshot revenues and we were looking at a $2.5 billion budgetary shortfall that had to be addressed. And there were various measures taken, both governor's vetoes as well as holdbacks, in preparing for what everyone expected to be a tremendous downturn in the economy and in the revenues available to fund governmental services. And so that's compared with the actual results because of the prudent budgetary measures that you all took, planning for the worst and hoping for the best. We actually had a $2.7 billion surplus for the fiscal year, the 2020 fiscal year. So if you look at that in total, we were looking at a $2.5 billion shortfall, and we ended up with a $2.7 billion surplus because of the tremendous rebound in the economy and in general revenues that I talked about before. So a $5.2 billion swing, which is not insignificant. And very important from a credit rating perspective, is that the 2021 budget was structurally balanced. That is, without the benefit of the federal monies. So this is a picture of reserves. And the reason reserves are important is this is a measure of financial flexibility. This is what the rating agencies look at in evaluating how is the state positioned financially to deal with both economic cycles as well as exogenous events, primarily hurricanes in Florida. And what we see is more normal levels in 17, 18, and 19 of around 10% of general revenues. This is a combination really of three things. It's our budget stabilization fund, it's unspent general revenues, and it's the tobacco reserves. Those are the three things that make up our reserves on an ongoing basis. And what you'll see in 2021 and 22 are extraordinary reserve levels, primarily because of the federal monies that we received. And it put us in a position to deal with the economic downturn as well as funding critical infrastructure needs. So this is, we're in a very, very good position from a reserve standpoint on a go-forward basis in funding the state's budget. So now I'll turn to the liability side of the balance sheet. Less interesting, but equally important, and it's all good. From a debt perspective and a debt position perspective, what we look at is a benchmark debt ratio. So we've been reducing the amount of debt that we'll talk about in a little more detail. We've also had improvement in our unfunded liability on pensions, and the credit rating agencies combine unfunded liability for pensions as well as debt and looking at your debt position. And lastly, importantly, is the health of the insurance market in the state. So those are really the three areas that the rating agencies are looking at in terms of the liability side of the balance sheet and things that can present long-term challenges for the state. And embedded within that is long-term financial costs associated with that. So just a quick picture of the history of debt outstanding. You can see that we had in the early 2000s, annual increases every year, peaking in 2010 at $28.2 billion. And since that point in time, we've been reducing the amount of debt that we have outstanding, primarily as a consequence of authorizing less new money debt in each year compared with the amount of principal repayments that are being made on an annual basis. So this is remarkable as well in terms of improving our financial position and not using debt to fund infrastructure within the state, which is the antithesis of what's done at the federal level. It has been an easy story to tell in terms of the improvement in our balance sheet as a consequence of using less debt. So another thing that's playing in our favor is extraordinarily favorable market conditions that has been a consequence of federal monetary policy over the last decade. So what we've had, what we've experienced on the debt side, and really from an interest rate standpoint, are extraordinarily low interest rates. So we've been able to take advantage of that by refinancing the debt that we have outstanding from higher rates to lower rates. So this is simply a chart to show you the activity and what we've been engaged in and what we've been focused on, which is aggressively pursuing opportunities to lower the interest rate on the debt that we have outstanding and reducing our annual obligation to make payments on the debt that we have outstanding. And so what you see is we've executed 132 transactions totaling $17.8 billion over the last decade and reduced our interest costs by a total of $3.8 billion. Or if you look at that on a present value basis, $2.9 billion in savings. So what does that mean? It basically lowers the annual debt service requirements that we're required to make on servicing our debt. This is a benchmark debt ratio. This is simply the measure that we've used to manage ourselves relative to our debt position. And our benchmark debt ratio is debt service to revenues available to pay. So it's what is our annual payment required on all of our debt divided by the revenues that we have available to pay. And back in 1999, embedded in the statute is a 6% target, which represented by the green horizontal line, and a 7% cap represented by the red horizontal line. And what we try to do is manage within that ratio so that we take a long-term look because of the long-term economic cost associated with debt, which is usually 20 or 30 years, and compare that to the revenues and the projected revenues that we're going to have available to pay. So this is simply a measure of the long-term fixed cost embedded within our budget to pay for the debt that we currently have outstanding. And what you see is the blue squiggly line simply tracks that benchmark debt ratio over time. And you can see it was above the limit in 2008 and 2009. That was because of the drop in revenues that we have. And then you see the continual improvement in that benchmark debt ratio because of using less debt to fund infrastructure, as well as the refinancing savings that we had, as well as growth in revenues over that period of time. So what you see is a substantial improvement in our benchmark debt ratio, which again is our long-term fixed cost embedded within our budget to service our debt. And we're well below our 6% target and not even approaching the 7% cap. So we are well within our means from a policy perspective in terms of how much does debt cost and what is our long-term fixed cost associated with debt. Now, I'll move on to Florida's credit ratings. So credit ratings are obviously an important indicator of our financial health and the strength of our economy. We're rated AAA by all three rating agencies with a stable outlook. That's remarkable and largely a tribute to the institutional discipline that you all have demonstrated over the years in positioning us well to deal with all of the economic challenges we're confronted with. So the factors analyzed in assigning the state's credit rating, you see them there: governance framework, financial management, budgetary performance, debt and liability that we talked about, the state's economy and the vibrancy of the economy, and then lastly, ESG is the new acronym being used in our space dealing with long-term consequences of those factors. And I think what is more insightful rather than those are how Florida has come to be recognized by the rating agencies in terms of looking at their comments and seeing the color commentary that's embedded within their credit rating reports will give you a sense of the strengths and weaknesses confronted by the state. And I don't expect any changes in the credit ratings because of how we're positioned now, as strong as we've ever been, I would say. But I think the rating agency commentary will give you more color when we review the comments that they have to say. But it largely reflects that Florida's been managed very prudently over the long term, and that's the expectation that they've come to expect from us. So strong economic growth, strong reserves, willingness to make budget adjustments necessary to balance the budget, moderate debt and pension liabilities, and strong budgetary management, which is a tribute to this body. Challenges, not surprisingly, exposure to economic cycles, environmental risks, state-sponsored insurance entities to stabilize the insurance market, and pension liabilities and methodologies. The rating agencies will continue to evaluate our ability to maintain structural budget balance, which is something you'll hear about. And they've also recognized that our outsized risk associated with climate change, hurricanes, and sea level rise. So, and then on the pension liabilities, I would be remiss in not mentioning that we've made great progress on the assumptions and methodologies used in calculating our pension liabilities. And we're in a very strong financial position, top quartile on that, and have reduced our exposure to unfunded liabilities. This is the rating agency feedback. I do this just to provide you with a little color commentary from words from them, and you can glean from that what their expectations are with respect to Florida. This is how they think about Florida and how they've come to expect what they've come to expect from the state. So Fitch says it's consistently demonstrated sound financial operations, acting to balance budget and maintain sound reserve levels through economic cycles. Moody's characterizes us as sound fiscal management practices will continue through future economic cycles and administrations, maintenance of strong reserve levels to offset economically sensitive sales tax collections. And from S&P, Florida's economic outlook continues to surprise to the upside. Ample reserves, state managed through peak recessionary winds and is well positioned to benefit from a resurgence in economic growth. And then here's the ESG commentaries. Florida's environmental risks are above the sector given its vast coastline, but the risk has been mitigated by the creation of entities to provide for a stable insurance market and measures to address climate resiliency. And then lastly, just sort of a quick overview of ESG, since it's becoming such a significant part of our world in terms of how they think about credit and how they think about credit ratings. Again, it stands for environmental, social, and governance. It's more of a risk assessment than anything else. It has not changed any credit ratings. I don't expect it to change in the near term any credit ratings, but it is becoming increasingly an important part of their analysis. So the focus in Florida is obviously on E because of where we sit and where we live and what we're exposed to. And that would be financial impacts of hurricanes, having sufficient reserves to be able to deal with unexpected financial contingencies and financial challenges caused by that. And we have historically been able to do that and have responded very well. The S and the G are much more amorphous. There really is not any consensus within the credit markets about what those mean and why they matter. But so stay tuned on those. They're currently characterized as favorable for us because of the growth in Florida, because people are coming to Florida to live, because of the quality of life and the affordability of living in Florida. But nevertheless, it will be something that we'll have to pay close attention to how this evolves in the credit markets. Fitch says Florida's environmental risk above those of the sector because of our coastline and extreme weather events, and again, reference to creation of entities to stabilize the insurance market. Same thing for Moody's, and really the same thing from S&P, although I would note that S&P has noted not only the creation of the entities to stabilize the insurance market, but also the appropriations for resiliency infrastructure and paying attention to preparing for the future has been noted as a credit positive. So kudos to you all for having the long view and making taking the opportunity provided by the federal dollars to make meaningful investments in those kinds of infrastructure to preserve the quality of life, to preserve the quality of water in the state, and to deal with the contingencies and challenges facing the state. So that's it for me, Mr. Chairman, and I'm happy to entertain any questions at your discretion.
Yes, sir. I'm sure the speaker will be happy to read that last slide about the resiliency that S&P pointed out. So, members, any questions? Mr. Watkins? Yeah. Ranking Member Durham, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Watkins, thank you for being here this morning. I appreciate your presentation. Wanted to go back just so I understand on slide 6, where we're talking about debt position, your third or fourth bullet point, there is the second half of it says, however, weakness in Florida property insurance market could result in an increase in loss exposure liability. Is what you're saying there that there is a weakness, or that potentially because of, I think you called them earlier, like exogenous events, hurricanes or things of that nature, may create a weakness, or is there, are you inferring that there's a weakness? And if there is, can you kind of elaborate what you mean by that?
We're actually in a pretty good place, I think, in terms of there's been some recent deterioration in the primary market, I think that you have heard about, in terms of the strength of the primary insurance companies and the domestics only in Florida, and an actual increase in the policies that Citizen is writing, so that's exposure to the state. So we made tremendous progress in bringing that exposure down through depopulation and other initiatives. There's been a rough couple of years and some backsliding on that because of adverse loss development through issues that you all have dealt with legislatively as well. So hopefully that will have the desired impact. The Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund is in as strong a position as it's ever been in terms of the resources available to deal with its reimbursement obligation in backstopping the insurance market in Florida. So I would say, I would characterize it as we're in a good place, but that's season to season and can change rapidly and dramatically, which is why we need to be well positioned to deal with the inevitable consequences of things that we cannot control.
Members, any other questions? Representative Will Hyde or Masullo? Let's go Will Hyde first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, Chair Masullo. Thank you, Mr. Watkins, for your presentation this year, obviously. The presentation last year was a little more bleak, and so it's good to see Florida's in a much better place this year. I just want to talk a little bit about the reserves that you mentioned. Last year we talked about how much reserves we used, or did we really get into the obligated budgeted reserves but not really dip into our actual reserves last year? And so I think you said on slide 1, we're at, what is that, 26 to 27% reserves. As I understand, that's a pretty good percentage to be at overall state budget. Is that true?
Very strong, unprecedented, I would say.
Okay, thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. You're recognized.
Thank you. And when you talk about the sustainability of some of our projects and things happening, obviously our work is never done. But you mentioned a little bit about the stability of the Florida retirement system. Could you expound on that just a little bit, if you don't mind?
So there has been an unfunded liability within the pension fund. The funded ratio is the quick and dirty measure people use to evaluate the strength of the pension system. Ours is 85%, so we're 85% funded, which basically means from an actuarial perspective, we have assets available to pay for the promises in terms of employee retirement of 85%. All of that is based on projections, 30-year projections. So you change one assumption by just a modicum, and it has an outsized impact on the ultimate calculation. We've been steadily bringing down the return assumption, the investment return assumption from the pension, because it was too high. And that is done through estimating conference process. And it's calmed down from 7.75 to 6.8% was the last 2 weeks ago that they adopted. So that puts us in a much better position on a go-forward basis. So not to say that we have any, we're actually top tier and recognized by the rating agencies as being well-funded at 85%. But there still is a projected shortfall over the long term. But getting those assumptions and getting those actuarial methodologies right, which I would say best practices, which equals prudent financial management, make sure that we don't have a problem over the long term.
Chair Masullo.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Mr. Watkins, for your presentation. In the last 12 months, we've seen an extraordinary increase in property values as well as costs. Now, where they may be time limited and hopefully the benchmark will sort of stabilize, have you taken those into consideration with some of your risk assessments as far as our reserves?
Not directly. It's something that we're always mindful of, and we provided a lot of information after the Great Recession in terms of number of bankruptcies filed and keeping track of median home sales prices and things like that. So we are not accounting for specifically inflated real estate values in any way in assessing our levels of reserves. So I would say that's, so it is one of the factors that the rating agencies are always interested in and looking at. It was much more prevalent 7 years ago and much more a part of the discussion than it is today, for whatever reason. But it is something that we pay attention to.
Thank you.
President Williams, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On slide number 6, you spoke about long-term challenges. What does that look like, and what is long-term for us?
Oh, long-term. It's beyond the amount of runway I have left. I know that. Longer term, 10 years and out.
Do you have a follow-up, President Williams?
And what, yes, Mr. Chair. What some of those challenges could be?
I would say long-term challenges are climate-related risk, sea level rise, hurricanes, the sensitivity of our economy to economic cycles. Florida is characterized 75% of our general revenues are sales taxes. We have no personal income tax in the state, contrasted with other states across the country that typically that have personal income taxes. So the way that's characterized by the rating agencies is our revenues base is narrow and volatile. So it is being in a position to manage through the inevitable economic cycles that we encounter and having the financial flexibility necessary to do that. So those are the top of mind, what comes to mind when I talk about, think about long-term challenges and how that's used in the context of the rating agencies.
Any other questions, members? Seeing no other questions, Mr. Watkins, thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, that does it for today's committee agenda. I want to say thanks to Mike Miller for being with us today. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Alexander moves we rise without objection. The meeting's adjourned. Thank you all.